Subject of this evening's lesson has to do with mocking. The subject is often overlooked in its importance as we set this thing up in the introduction. And the reason is that when a person is put down for believing in something, especially if you're a Christian, they have a tendency to either avoid those who are giving them a hard time, or they do not take a hard enough stand so that people don't know what they really believe. So it has its effect. What happens is when people come down on what you believe, we have a tendency to withdraw, and the result is fewer and fewer people know really what Christianity is about. And those that have a tendency to mock, they're encouraged to do even more of it, and they increase. So although, you know, we don't meet this usually, you know, head on, this is why it's not important to us, because we just kind of shy away from, you know, trying to deal with those that that do mock or ridicule. It becomes a downward spiral of subtle behavior, and that can basically affect the whole of society or a world to such an extent. Ethelgard Smith, in his book, you know, Smith was a used to be a lawyer at was it Pepperdine, and what he used to do in his law class is ask the students, the new students coming in, whether, you know, they believed in right or wrong, if there was something that that they felt definitely, you know, was wrong. And even if he got a little bit of a hesitation, he always thought, well, he'd bring up the subject of the Holocaust, the Nazis putting their Jewish prisoners into ovens after long protracted torture and stuff. And generally, you know, people say, well, yeah, that was wrong. But he said it got to the point in his class where even when he brought up that, people began to hedge. You know, they really didn't want to say if it was wrong or, you know, or make a commitment. And he found out this was even more startling since the last class he taught, he had two little Jewish girls in it who didn't want to actually say that the Holocaust was wrong. So the mocking that we get in this world does affect us. It does, you know, put us on guard, and it has a tendency for us just to shy away from the problems that we face because of it. Hopefully what we can do in this lesson is to bring the evil out in the open, to show the Christian how to confront when we are mocked, either converting the mocker or shaming them back into their darkness, or shutting their mouths, you know, from the position they're taking. Mocking is something that's brought up. It's something that we see a lot of God's people having to undergo, but we also see in some cases, you know, God showing us how to fight back. In 2 Peter 3, it talks about mockers will come with their mocking and saying, where's the promise of his coming? For ever since the fathers fell asleep, all continues just as it was from the beginning. This is why I had Andrew read from Ecclesiastes. In the first chapter, what a lot of people don't realize about Ecclesiastes, you have to look for the little phrase, under the sun. And you'll run into it over and over again. And that what it's trying to tell you, whenever the conversation has to deal with what is said under the sun, it's telling you what men believe without God in their life. For them, that's as far as life goes. And so when people quote from the first chapter of Ecclesiastes, going, all, it all continues just as it was, and there's nothing new under the sun, that's the feeling of men without God in their life. When you do put God in your life, there's all sorts of things that are new. There's all sorts of possibilities, all sorts of things you never even heard of in the spiritual realm. And God can lead you into it. You know, life is a lot more optimistic, a lot more open, a lot more worth, you know, living and exploring. So they, you know, from Ecclesiastes, they just see it as a vicious circle, you know, where the rains fall, they go in the mountains into the sea, and then they recycle the same old stuff over and over again. What Peter is talking about here is people that go, well, everything's continued on. And sometimes we feel that way. You know, I get up and go to the same old job every morning, and the school seems the same, and we're just on a treadmill over and over again. But Peter goes, wait a minute. there's something you're not considering here. There's always been times when life has been interrupted. You know, when you've got to tell the mocker, no, it doesn't go on. That you've got to consider times, you know, when it was different. And he brings up the flood. At one point, the whole world was destroyed by the flood. And that's not taken into their consideration. And this is part of what we deal with, you know, when the mockers, is you got to start stating facts. You've got to bring into their remembrance, you know, things that that they've overlooked. Right now, people are kind of like slamming the country, not realizing what an incredible experience or experiment the United States has been. God has helped us achieve a great deal and has helped make us, you know, the great country that we've become. And for people to put it down, you know, there's things they don't know, they overlook, in a sense of, I mean, if you just stop to think. If you know people, you'll know that there's always people, no matter what race, that want to help others, and there's others that want to use others. Now, if our country has been just a country of users and abusers and making slaves and everything, the minorities in our country wouldn't have the voice they do today. It just wouldn't be a possibility. So even as, you know, they speak out against, you know, they don't stop to think of how come they have the liberty to speak out. Because somebody sacrificed in order to give them that liberty. They don't have it in other countries. They just haven't stopped to think, what is going on? What is, you know, a reality going on here? So this is one of the things that Peter wants us, you know, to consider also. In 2 Kings, you know, the example of Elisha, who went up from there to Bethel, and as he was going up by the way, some young lads came out of the city and began to mock him. Here's a prophet of God, and they're giving him a hard time. In fact, they say, you know, they give him a hard time, they call him a bald head. Now I consider myself not really bald, I've just grown beyond my tree line. But just want you to know, when the ones they did mark this guy for being bald, you know, the bears came out and ate him. So just be careful how you treat bald people. Okay? Matthew 27, there's two instances of how they treated the Lord. The Roman soldiers put a crown of thorn on his head. They put a reed in his hand as a comical gesture. They knelt down before him in sarcasm and mocked him, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews." Even worse, the chief priests also, along with the scribes and the elders, were mocking him, saying, "You saved others. Why can't you save yourself?" And of course, they didn't understand the circumstances, the situation, or whatever. In 1 Kings 18:27, you have it going the other way, where it came about at noon that Elijah began to mock the prophets of Baal. So mocking is a good, you know, it's effective. And there's at times when God runs out of patience that he begins to use it too, but he uses it in an interesting way. Elijah here, you know, as you know, their God is not obeying them, he goes, "Maybe you got to call out a little louder. Maybe he can't hear you." He's a God. Sometimes he doesn't want to pay attention. Perhaps he's occupied or gone aside, or he's on a journey, or perhaps he's asleep and needs to be awakened. Of course, Elijah doesn't think any of this. He knows they're just praying to a piece of stone. But you know, his sarcasm is striking and gets to the point. So you can see Isaiah's description of what an idol is. You know, he tries to describe this. You know, he says, "You got to think about this. You know, you go into the woods, you chop down a tree, you get this piece of wood, half of it, you chop up for firewood, and it serves you. The other half you carve into a totem, and you bow down and serve it." So sometimes the mocking can illustrate just how absurd somebody has gone, you know, in their thinking. So we find it all through the Old and the New Testament. We're going to cut into, you know, why mockers mock, how they mock, and then how to deal with it to help them and to take a better stand for what you believe. To why they mock, psychologically it's interesting that as to just why people do this. Often it is a childish reflex to impress their peers. You know, little kids do that, and some grown-ups never get over the practice. They hope, you know, others will agree with them when they ridicule, you know, somebody they're persecuting. But nothing falls flatter than when you try to ridicule somebody and nobody laughs. Okay, so you got to kind of put yourself out there, hope, you know, that you're on solid ground. Mocking is also a lazy individual's means of dealing with a problem. It is easier than sitting down and trying to understand another person's position and either properly reasoning with them or maybe coming to an agreement. So this is one of the problems we face is we'd be perfectly happy as Christians to sit down with people and just discuss things. That's what God does through Isaiah, you know, with the Israelites. Come, let us reason together. It's the proper way of going, you know, if people will let you. Okay? But that's a hard process. You have to sit there and you have to try to understand what they're saying, and you have to put, you know, you have to know what you're talking about and be able to put your facts in a line in such a way that you can present it in a way that's logical, you know, reasonable, and that they understand. Okay? A mocker then often postures from a position of ignorance. I mean, if this is your course, you've never really listened to the other side. You really never have listened to the facts that are out there. They're not really knowing or caring to know about all that, you know, could be said. They may also be using mockery to cover their own fears. In either case, you've got somebody really more to be pitied than to be turned off by, more to confront and try to reach. The mocker's attitude and position of argument, if that is what it can be called, is not something they have studiously worked out, but can be what is learned from his society's prejudices or those of his parents and his peers. It may be a part of a heritage or a tradition, therefore assumed to be right, the word assumed to be right or real, without ever having challenged it. And this is, you know, something we have to be careful of in our own selves. Look at our own lives and what we've accepted in the past, and maybe we begin to put down in others. Perhaps we've accepted something that we really haven't tested out yet. Because the mocker's own position is often unjustifiable, he has to rework facts. You've seen this. And produces emotionally charged railings in order to defend his position. So instead of, you know, trying to persuade individuals or an audience or whatever, they'll just sit there and try to put somebody down. And you know they're really, you know, backpedaling when they have to twist and distort things. I mean, it should be an obvious thing for them and for us. If we really think we have to rework history or the things that are real and give them half-truths in order to justify ourselves, it's time to look and go, are we really right? I mean, it should be a flag to us. And it should also help us as we try to understand others. Perhaps they're, at that point, they're a little bit harder to convince, okay, because they're trying to lie to themselves. If given time, they will rewrite history. And this is what we see a lot. It gets harder to dig out what the truth is. Because they often cannot properly support their arguments, the mocker has to rely on other means of winning or persuading. And a lot of times, violence is the outgrowth. That's what they have to resort to. It's easier to get a mob going. The more people you get together, what they call a mob mentality. The more people you get, you know, the number is inversely proportional to the IQ of the group. I mean, the bigger the mass, the dumber it gets. And that's what, you know, you see Paul's had to deal with, and we'll look at that. Since mocking is unfortunately successful with many, we find it in the scriptures that God also does. You know, if it works for you, you know, God will do it in order to help you see what the right is. However, this is usually after he has well established his case and is forced to use it on those who are hard of heart. It is also a form of poetic justice, often incorporated by the divine, to put the world in its place. This is what we just saw with the prophets of God putting down the worshipers of Baal. They'd already been reasoned with. You know, he tried to contact them, tried to, you know, let them know what the truth is. You know, you can just hopefully using their own weapon to show just how ridiculous their stance is. Okay. How mockers mock. One of the main tools used now in the political arena is the screaming of hypocrisy. The position of worldliness, often labeled liberalism, is the erosion or elimination of standards of morality. I mean, they really don't have a standard anymore. So it's very easy, of course, you know, if you don't have no standards, you're never a hypocrite. Unless you try to take a position of higher moral ground when you don't have any morals, then that's the ultimate hypocrisy. But as a tool, you know, as you're arguing against an opponent, to accuse them of hypocrisy because, you know, they're trying to stand for what's right and stand for morals, and then you see them slip, okay, it's mislabeled hypocrisy. The problem, you know, is that, you know, Paul says we've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. It's hard to live a perfect life. You know, only one person's been able to do it, and that was the Son of God. So for the rest of us, you know, how do we handle it? You know, and this is where it becomes, you know, very effective, because, you know, we do sin, and we fear that we're being hypocrites. And therefore, we're a little quiet. We don't want to be judgmental of somebody else if we consider ourselves under judgment. But that's not the way the system works. And this is why you have to know about God's grace. You have to know about His law of faith. And what we've been looking at in 1 John. You can walk in the light and still have sin that's covered by the blood of Christ. Okay, this is a latitude that God gives us, as long as we're trying to do the right thing. We're not like the rest of the world. Okay? I mean, when you get the picture, the standard of the world is down here. The standard of a Christian is where God sets it, way up here. Okay? We're not like the rest of the world if we're trying to meet that standard and occasionally slip. I mean, even if we slip, our standard of trying to live properly and righteously is far greater than the world. Plus, we know that we've got intercession by the Son of God. The world doesn't have that. And so they're being the greater hypocrites by trying to judge us. Okay? It's not hypocrisy to try to do the best you can and then, you know, to not quite reach it. Every athlete, you know, accepts that. You know, they know they can try their best. They can work at an Olympic standard. But even, you know, the best Olympiads, they always, you know, have a little glitch. You know, you get very few tens, you know, in the exercises that you do. So are they being hypocrites? They've tried to be athletes and, you know, they didn't quite make it, you know, to you know, be a perfect, you know, performer all the way across? No. But they tried at a higher level than the rest of us. And this is what the Christian is. Someone's trying at a higher level. And that doesn't make you a hypocrite. True hypocrisy is having no standard and still claiming to be good. It is far easier to belittle or to build prejudice to ideas than to actually combat them, especially if the facts support the opposition. So you just put them down, you belittle them, you mock them, whatever, even though by itself it probably stands far stronger than you have faith in. And this is what you have to understand as a Christian. What you believe in is the truth. What God has given us. It's His wisdom. And all railing does, all mockery does, is just bounce off this stuff. So don't let it persuade you against, you know, what God has given us. When ideas cannot be put down, mockers employ slander and character assassination. And the way the debates are going, and they're getting a little bit raw in the political arena, it's not that they just get out and argue points anymore. You know, they don't bring up a subject and one person takes one side up, another person takes another. The debating, as you supposedly learn in college or used to, you know, with certain gentlemanly rules of proceeding, and that's all out the window. Now all people do is sit there, you know, especially if you got no principles and you got no solutions, they just character assassinate. I mean, a person doesn't even have a chance anymore. That's why very few people even bother to run for public office. It's It's because before they even get out there to, you know, be able to state their case, you know, you've got all sorts of people, you know, digging into their past, trying to find something that's wrong. And that's character assassination. But it's also a flag that if that's what they have to resort to, their own position is untenable. They've got nothing to defend themselves with. And so they can't argue the issues, so they have to go after the character. Again, it's a good sign that you're on the right track. The mocker then does not have to address the limitations of his own views if he can successfully get people to ignore the other person's. This is easily done since most people do indulge in their weaknesses and are prone to side against someone arguing that laws and principles are needed. Why else is gossip so recreational and false witnesses so easily believed? Okay, that's the tendency of the world. If the world doesn't want to listen to you, again, that's a good thing. This is what God tells us. You know, very few people want to listen to the truth, want to examine themselves, to find out what's wrong and start correcting themselves in God's presence. I mean, it's a hard task. So most of the world, if you're taking a stand as a Christian, you'll not find them being very sympathetic with you. It's just one of those things that, you know, if you're trying, what the world is doing is it's got people in it that basically their justification for doing what everybody else is doing is that we're all human and we all sin, therefore we all dismiss ourselves. And for someone to try to live a right life and to say there is principles, there is right and wrong, there's truth and there's error, it puts a lie to what they're living. This is why they absolutely hated the Son of God, because he could come and live a perfect life and see, it's possible. It's possible. This is why the witnesses brought against him all had to lie. They couldn't find anything wrong with them. It wasn't just Jesus. You know, you'll notice the same thing with Daniel. They tried to cook Daniel's goose, and even his enemies couldn't find anything wrong with him. So they had to find a way to use what he did, you know, in the belief of his God against him. Expect when you're trying to be good, and it's not just, you know, with Christian principles, you get a strong work ethic and you're going to run into trouble. A lot of people, you know, at the workplace, they hang too much around the water cooler, they talk too much instead of getting their job done, and they justify it. And you find somebody just comes in and wants to give a good 8 hours and work hard and generally do, you know, what amounts to the work of two people, you know, they're not going to be loved by the rest of the staff. You know, because you've just shown that it can be done. How to handle mocking? Understand that mockers have no solutions to problems, or very little, you know, that plague their lives and their societies and families and whatever. Often to win an argument, just ask them what ideas they've come up with. They usually have nothing better and therefore often feel part of anarchists. This is what a mocker is, in many cases, an anarchist. They see something and they just want to pull it down. They just want to pull it down. Okay, what's your solution? What's better? After you've leveled the whole planet into rubble, what are you going to build in its place? Have you ever tried to create a society, build a government, get people to go along with it, police it? If you've never done that and don't understand how any of it works, keep your mouth shut. Anybody can build a bomb and blow up a neighborhood. Anybody. Anybody can find a gun someplace in a power that's beyond them and use it to, you know, destroy somebody else's life. It's very hard to build a life. It's very hard to build a soul from scratch. You know, even lesser things, it's hard to be a doctor and to cure diseases. You've got to go to school for half of your life. It's hard work. It costs money. It demands a lot of effort. To build anything demands a lot from you. It demands nothing from you to start leveling everything. So ask the mocker, you know, what have you got to replace it with? After you tear it down, what are you going to put there? Okay? What are you going to use to replace God? And it's not just, in fact, I talked with somebody last week. You know, they said, well, if we put together some, you know, some principles that people can mostly agree on, what is right and whatever, you know, then we can get everybody working together, and it'll never work. Never work. Why? Because there's a psychology behind law. Our founding fathers understood this. Okay? You cannot put together a government that's made up of people that are immoral and don't want to obey the law. Okay? What you need is a bunch of people that fear God, that don't want to do what's wrong, that want to please Him, and then society works. You take God out of the formula and nothing works. Everybody has to sense that whatever they're doing, somebody is watching them. A divine presence that knows exactly what you're doing, what you're thinking, and that you're going to be held accountable for it. If you do not have that, generally what the world thinks is rules were made to be broken. Okay? The psychology of it. Even Rousseau once said, even if we didn't have a God, we should invent one just to keep people right. It's got to be there. J. Edgar Hoover, it's not just the electric chair that's going to make society better, it's the high chair. You got to raise up people wanting to do the right thing, not wanting to break the law. That's how society works. You cannot get enough militia, you cannot get enough policemen to keep everybody good. Just doesn't work. They have to have a respect for authority. They have to have black and white fever. It's interesting. Over in Japan, if you go downtown, one of the things you'll see is plastic policemen. Well, every once in a while you have up in these little things in the middle of an intersection, you have a policeman directing traffic or giving tickets or whatever. And so they have what we have, black and white fever. I mean, you're going down the road 80 miles an hour and you see a black and white coming, you automatically hit the brake. So what they do is they put plastic policemen around. And it keeps the Japanese, you know, from not speeding. Because they don't know which one's plastic and which one's real. But there's got to be that fear, first of all. You can barely reason with a mob. Paul shows us this over and over again. I mean, if you go through Acts, you know, Paul wants to get out. I mean, his friends have to keep him confronting the mob that Demetrius has put together. Paul is constantly trying to talk to the Jews that are gathering and building up, you know, the Gentiles against them, whatever. And you can't reason with, you know, the big amount of people. In fact, you've seen this probably in the workplace or at school. If you're trying to talk Christianity to somebody and a few other people join it, you're now trying to argue with four or five people. It can't be done. Okay, even though you can handle it all, you know, they won't let you answer. Before you can answer someone that's just asked a question, somebody else would override it. Very hard to handle. So what you do is you find the ones that are interested and you cut them out of the herd and you talk with them off the side. This is what you see in Acts 13, Paul dealing with, you know, his confrontation of the Jews, trying to get the, I'm not sure Acts 13, which what it is. 17 is the Mars Hill, where he's talking with the Athenians, and by the time he reaches the resurrection, he starts getting the jeers. But afterwards, some of them come up to him and go, we'd like to hear more about it. So he takes them off. In 19, he's talking with in the synagogue, and he's having problems, but there are some that want to listen, so he takes them aside and starts teaching them in the school of Tyrannus. So that's one of the best way to handle the mob mentality or the mockers. Find the ones that are truly interested. Get them off to the side and talk with them. Ask questions. Mocking is an aggressive, intimidating form that puts an opponent off balance. Generally, when one makes an assertion, though, they are obligated to defend it. If you can get someone, ask them a question, have them make a definite statement. It's very easy to say, oh, that won't work, give all that No, we tried that a lot of times. It's, you know, never developed. You know, it's easy to say that kind of stuff. But when you ask, what would you do? If they commit themselves to something, they have to defend it. Anytime you make an assertion, the burden of proof is on you. So put them in that spot. This is why Jesus constantly asked questions. And usually, the questions he asked, they couldn't answer. So it becomes a very good tool that God has shown us on how to deal with these people. Mocking. To put a mocker on the defense, have him state his case. And this is what Jesus did with the Pharisees. Notice in Matthew 22, after the while, they couldn't take it anymore. No one was able to answer him a word, nor did anyone dare from that day on ask him another question. And these were lawyers. And when he began to have them state their case, they couldn't do it. They couldn't answer his questions. In this context of Matthew 22, there's also some other pointers. First, you have to know what you're talking about. I mean, this is what Jesus said. A lot of times why we back off is because we don't know what we're talking about. So what we need to do is to have the same kind of knowledge that Christ does. You know, so that requires a lot of study, you know, a lot of looking at context, you know, to see what kind of questions that he's dealing with and what the proper answers are. Then you have to be able to point out the obvious misunderstandings and the conceptions of others. Where did they go wrong? You know, where in their logic or their did they misstep, or where in their facts did they pick up something that wasn't true? You've got to be able to know this. In 2 Peter 3, 5 through 6, this is what Peter does. He says, when they maintain this, it escapes their notice that the world was formed out of water and it was destroyed by water. Something they didn't know there. And you're going to have to fill it in for them. Also, learn to ignore stupid questions, or at least point them out as for what they are. In Proverbs 26, so honor is not fitting for a fool. Sometimes the way people behave, don't even bother to talk with them. You just get in a discussion that nobody wins. The rod is for the back of fools. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest you also be like him. Answer a fool as his folly deserves, lest he be wise in his own sight. You know, sometimes by listening to what people do and just prattling on, we help build them up. You know, they think they're saying something, I've made this mistake. Not just necessarily in religious terms, but man, I've had people tell me bizarre things, and I made the mistake of just listening patiently. I know a lot about astrology I never wanted to know, or about the gospel and the stars, and how to figure out the course of life by geometric formulas. I had one guy, some engineer, who really had a strange philosophy on how life worked. And that's what you're going to run into, a lot of philosophies out there that are half-baked. There's a TV show on called Numbers, and I know they picked it up in a commercial too, you know, that life is figured out by mathematics. I don't think so. You know, mathematics doesn't account for the idiot that wants to pick up a gun and start shooting people. You know, how do you put that in a formula? You know, God's got the answers to how the heart functions. And it's wiser to figure out life from God's viewpoint than from math class, which most people don't understand anyway. Always stand in the wisdom of God. When you understand where he is coming from, it gives answers to all fools and enlightens the wise. And that's what you're here for anyway. You know, to get the fool to shut up, and for somebody who really wants to know God's wisdom, you have to know it and be able to sit down with them and impart it to them. Galatians 6, 7, do not be deceived. God is not mocked. That's the confidence you have. You know, as people are trying to ridicule God for whatever reason, God has stood the test of time. He's still powerful. He's still wiser than any man that's ever lived or any gathering of men. Have confidence in that. You know, if there's a weakness there, it's your weakness. You just don't understand his wisdom. You need to study more. Don't let your faith become shattered. Increase it with knowledge and an understanding of God's grace. God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, this he will also reap. The mockers will reap what they're sowing. Okay? Your love of truth and your love of God will reap eternal life for you. I cut it off there. We're getting out of time. Invitation is extended. If there's any way we can help you in your studies of looking at God's Word, how to understand the context of something, how to work what you know into your life, to make your life fruitful, to have God in your life, working with you. Or if you just like the prayers of the congregation, let us know what your needs are.